This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, so continuing a little bit of our shmooze from outside. The Rambam says that a person should eat until the point that he is three quarters full. That's when he should stop. Somebody once told me that's a Shver Rambam. Shver Rambam. Because most people feel that it's a lot easier not to eat than it is to eat and stop. But life is all about stopping and starting. Life is all about adjusting our schedule to the Rebbeinu Shem schedule. So there's a Yid in Yerushalayim, Rav Natan Tzemer, but he was a very special person. He's the one that used to say, the world has it wrong, with that famous story of Rabbi Saul Salanter. Why did Rabbi Saul Salanter start the Muslim movement? You know the story, Rafal? Why did Rabbi Saul Salanter start the Muslim movement? That's right. The shoemaker became rich. And this person picks up, you know, and he did a real big, beautiful wedding. I don't want to say the name of the hall because I want to get sued. Teres Itcha. He did big, famous Teres Itcha on the seafront. And fireworks shooting all over the place. And they were really, it really irked them that there's a new rich guy on the block. So he used to be a shoemaker. So right by the chuppah, they took off their shoes and waved it at him. Ah, can you fix our souls? And he collapsed out of embarrassment. So Rabbi Saul Salanter said, without learning Musar, see what a person can fall into. So Rav Natan Tzemer used to say that people don't understand the story. Who did he start the Musar movement for? He said, for the people that waved the shoes at this guy marrying off his daughter, Matan Shvagint, they couldn't take it that there's a new rich guy on the block. He says, for them, it wouldn't have helped. Wouldn't have helped. Musar movement wouldn't have helped. He said, he waved it for the guy to collapse. What did you collapse for? Look at your life. You went from a shoemaker, however it worked out. You won the lottery, I don't know, you invested in the right stock. Before your aunt, great aunt passed away. Whatever the case was. You went from rags to riches. You're making this big, beautiful wedding. Last wedding, you ran around collecting for Hachnasas Kala, and now you're this wealthy, wonderful person. You got embarrassed. You're right, they waved the shoes at you. So for that, you collapse. For that's what the Musar is going to help for. So, Rav Natan Tzemer, Rav Natan, he came to visit someone in Eretz Yisrael, and he had to be there overnight till the next morning. So his father, both sides are on. It means that we got it, both the upside and the downside. You got to keep it going. So Akalpanim, in any event, where was I? Yes. So he was there overnight by his son. Rav Natan Tzemer was overnight by his son. He had an appointment in the morning, so he was staying there overnight. And he only slept, this was his minute, he slept from 11 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning. But he wouldn't go to sleep until he finished his shiurim, whatever he was makabel upon himself. So it got late, and here he is, he sits down, he's starting to learn. And he's learning, and he's learning, and he's learning. And the son says, Father, go to sleep. He says, no, I have to finish what I have to finish. He says, please, go to sleep. He says, no, I have to finish. I have to finish what I have to finish. See, he says, I don't understand the father. Anyway, the son goes in, he starts making himself a nice late-night snack. There's different ways of being masak and chatzos. Some people put on sackcloth and they sit down, they light candles, they cry. Some people do it more in a hidden way. They eat a piece of cake and then they say, Rachem by Alamichya or Benchen. And he's sitting down to a big midnight snack, big strawberry shortcake, whatever he's eating there. And he's like in the middle of the cake and his father comes in and goes, why don't you leave the rest for tomorrow? He goes, why don't you leave the rest for tomorrow? You want me to push off my shiurim for tomorrow? He says. So now, you know what they say? I heard from a Melech Biderman, he said, somebody once said, you know, he's supposed to be on a diet, him and his wife, but he's cheating. So he said, you know, you could only get away with that for a short while. And Rav Melech told him, it says, you know, Kol Machal Shem Shemayim B'Seisr Mafriyim Imenu B'Golui. You disgrace God's name in a hidden way, you get disgraced publicly. He says, you keep cheating. Eventually, when those buttons pop, you're not going to be able to say you're on a diet, right? Scales don't lie. Somebody once bought me a scale, smart aleck. I got on it the first time this recording came out. One at a time, please. One at a time, please. So let's think about this for a moment. So we sat outside, we started saying, so how did Reb Shimon Bar Yochai survive 13 years on carobs? And according to one shita, fine, on Yerushalayim, on, right, there's a Seir Fall on Pesach, he had, on Shabbos, he had what? I think it says on Shabbos he had te'enim, according to one shita. On Shabbos he had figs. How does a person survive in that? How does that work? How can you do it? And the answer is that let's try to understand the story, okay? Rav Shimon bar Yochai knows the Romans are after him. It's not so good if the Romans are after you. And to make a long story short, if somebody was captured by the Romans, on a good day he was just tortured. So where does Rav Shimon bar Yochai go to hide? He goes to hide in the Beis Medrash. Now, if you ask me, that sounds like a pretty foolish place to hide. I mean, the Romans are searching for Rav Shimon bar Yochai. You think they'll search for him in the Beis Medrash? Like, they would have never thought of that, right? Why did he hide in the Beis Medrash? Can anyone tell me that? Hilly. Yes. Shimon bar Yochai hid in the Beis Medrash. Don't you think it's like a foolish place to hide? I mean, when he hid in the back of a mechanic shop, you want to say he hid by, I don't know, some Olympic game, something. He hid in the...
He wanted to get out of jury duty.
It wasn't jury duty. He had much bigger problems than jury duty. So some say, well, you know, that's the last place they would have thought he would run, because they knew he's not going to run to the Beis Medrash because that's the first place. There's a little reverse reasoning. But I think the morale touches on this a little bit. That it says, Kol Makabel Olav Oil Torah, someone makabels upon him, someone really, really accepts upon himself the yoke of Torah. So Mavirin Mimenu Ol Malchus V'Ol Derech Eretz. They take away from him the oil of Malchus and the oil of Derech Eretz. And Rav Moshe came to the Chavetz Chaim and said he was drafted. What should I do? And the Chavetz Chaim told him that Kol Makabel Olav Oil Torah, Mavirin Mimenu Ol Malchus V'Ol Derech Eretz. He said, I was already drafted. So the Chavetz Chaim told Rav Moshe, it says Mavirin Mimenu. What does Mavirin Mimenu mean? They take it away from him. That means the old Torah works even if you're in trouble. You're already in trouble. So here he is, okay? He comes into the Beis HaMedrash, and Rav Shimon bar Yochai has the power to be mekabel upon himself the old Torah to the level where, poof, the Roman legions will not see him. What's his concern? His wife. His concern is what they're going to do to his wife, and also whether his wife has the kayach to be able to endure that level. So Rav Shimon bar Yochai has no choice. And he runs off. He has to take on a much lesser level of protection. The Kol Makabel Olav Oil Torah Mavirin Mimenu Ol Malchus V'Ol Derech Eretz was foolproof. Instead, he has to run off to a cave. Now, think about this. You're off and you're hiding in a cave. You know what these caves look like? No way to survive. No communication with human beings because the Romans could bug in and listen. Right? I mean, the Gemara says they send birds back and forth. And he's there with his son. And what do we have to hope for? I am in trouble. I'm in a cave. No place to run to. No way of food. No water. No clothes. No shelter. And worse than anything else in the world, no cell phones. And worse than anything else in the world, there's no hope. There's no expiration to this. There's no point when this is going to end. I'm here forever. Right? How am I going to survive? And most people at that point would collapse. Just like when they waved the shoes at him, most people would collapse. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai takes off his clothes and climbs into the ground to start learning. So we also spoke outside. How exactly did they start learning? Did he bring along a Shas? Did he bring along a Shulchan Aruch? He had no Atzrol Gemara, no Masifta Gemara. Like, how was he going to start learning? No Oitzra Chachma, no computer, nothing. Where? How? What did they learn? Maishi, what did they learn in the cave? What does it mean they learned? He's sitting there with his son. No svar. What did they learn?
Sod.
Sitting with his son, yes.
No, sod.
Sod. So they didn't have the zayir, because he's going to write it.
They learned it.
Oh, did they learn it? But they had no svarim.
This is sod. This is the whole thing.
That's the sod, right?
They said that you came to the like other Moishim before the chet.
We're getting there. Moishim's chapping out the drasha here. So the morale says something along the lines that he lifted himself to the level of Adam Arishon Kaidim Achet, which is why he didn't have clothes. Adam Arishon didn't have clothes either before. And what happens to Adam Arishon Kaidim Achet? We've done this before. I think several times this year already. The Chasam Sofer says, the Medrash says that Adam Arishon, before the Chet Eitz Hadas, was deaf and blind. What does it mean he was deaf and blind? Oh, he sinned for that. You're getting eyes and ears. What is that supposed to mean? And the answer is, it was, we've said the Marshall many times, a fellow's in a submarine, looks into the periscope, right, you know, and he sends up this antenna, and all of a sudden the tour of duty is over, out of the submarine, he starts crying. Why are you crying? No more periscope. No more secret microphone that goes above the water. Yeah. What? How am I going to see? How am I going to hear? Chokhem what you are. You don't need it. You're out of the submarine. That basically, our neshama is in a submarine. It's called the body. And our eyes are the periscope. Our ears are the microphone. And our mind are the computer, which is assessing the information and putting it all together and suggesting to us what to do, fight or flight. We're in a machine. The guf is a machine. The neshama sees not through eyes. The neshama hears not through ears. And the other thing, the seeing and the hearing has to be combined. They don't really happen at the same time, right? During a storm, what happens? What do you see first? Lightning. Because light travels faster than sound. So if you're seeing someone talk or you're seeing someone give a boring drasha and you're so bored, all you're doing is watching his mouth moving. But whatever the case may be. So even though you hear and see at the same time because we're so close to each other. Even though light travels at what? 186,000 miles a second? I know there's some taxis in Israel beat that, but still it's fast. And sound travels at like 700 miles an hour, right? 750? Something like that? So, you know, how do you even compare it? So when you're at close distances, it doesn't make a difference. But the reality is they're not really coming in at the same time. Even though it's miniature of seconds. And your mind is putting together, based on your experiences. And we know, ki ha-shoichet ya'aver eni chachamim. Right? Netanyahu did this whole thing, and he shows this whole thing with Iran. So what does President Trump say? This proves you have to get out of the deal. And what does Europe say? This proves we have to stay in the deal. So basically, what do people see? People see what they want to see. And it's true for Shalom Bayis, and it's true for almost everything. People see what they want to see, and people hear what they want to hear. So eyes are very deceiving. You know, they'll tell you that therapists will tell you the visual is much more powerful than the audio. Children that are delayed in their comprehension. Audio is much harder because audio relies much more on the brain interpreting what you're hearing. And then you have to combine that with the visual. Now all of this confusion started after the Chet Eitz Hadas. Prior to the Chet Eitz Hadas, there was no seeing or hearing through a guf, the neshama and guf. You didn't have that blockage. The stories with the after-death experiences and so on. People say, you know, they look down, they saw their body. And whatever you, how authentic it is, I don't know, but they're explaining something. And there's a common theme that rides through it. We weren't seeing through our eyes. It's a different kind of seeing and hearing. It was all happening at the same time. A little bit like we said, Olam Shana Nefesh, person, place, and thing. The dimensions aren't there. It's all happening at the same time. Hashem Bayichai and his son took off their clothes. They went to the earth. And they went into a different world. They went into a world of Adam Arishon before the Chet Eitz Hadas. And they reached the level that Klal Yisrael had during the Midbar. And that's why the Ben Ish Chai says that the man was the Charuvim. Har Chorev. That was the Buxa that they had, or the Caribs. And the water was the Be'er Shel Miriam, which purified you, which gave you Chachma, which gave you wisdom. The Arizal took Reb Chaim Vital out to the water, and they got the Be'er Shel Miriam. It says Matzah Shabbos, the women used to go out and look to Shep water, draw water from the well, because maybe in Nizdamaloi Be'er Shel Miriam, there's that famous story the Torah brings, which we've said many times. There was this man, he was a Menuvel and a Mukashchin. Which meant that he wasn't going to win the beauty contest. He was basically, if you looked at him, you collapsed from his ugliness. And she was Nebuch married to him, and his midos were as ugly as his looks. And she went out Matzah Shabbos to get water, and she came back from the well. And he was very angry because she was like 0.99 seconds late. And he started screaming at her, and she got so frightened that she just dropped the vase, and it cracked. Some of the water spritzed on him, and where the water hit his skin, the Medrash says this, it healed. All of a sudden, that area of his skin became like a child, a little baby. And he went running to the Rav, and the Rav said, your wife hit the jackpot. She hit the one in a trillion. She got the Be'er Shel Miriam. Quickly, take the rest of the water and pour it over your body. You're going to be healed. Take the rest of the water and pour it over your body. You are going to be healed. Please do that. And he said, but I yelled at my wife. And because I yelled at my wife, the water just splashed all over the place, and it's gone. He says, and you just lost your one-time opportunity to be able to be healed. So the Be'er Shel Miriam heals. It's the makar of all water. You had the man, the Anani HaKavod protected them. It washed them. It cleansed them. And this was the madrega that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai got to. Now, we're not going to reach the level of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai because we're not Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Harba, right? Asik Rav Shimon Vali also be other. But on our level, how many times is a person in a cave? For all practical purposes, we have to run away to a cave. People are stuck. Complex medical advice. They don't know what to do. They're getting conflicting opinions from experts. People stuck with shidduchim. People, there's so many people stuck. You feel like you're in a cave. And al pi derech hateva, no one has eitzes for you. And it's easy to throw in the towel and it's easy to give up. And there is a way, what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is teaching us and telling us, is there is a way to find yourself. There is a way to find, forget about your problems for a moment. Find yourself an appreciation in your own life. You don't need to prove to anyone the things that are going your way. That you should have a Simchas HaChaim. You can begin to reverse things. So after 12 years in the cave, they walk out. They start going out, right? Someone's standing outside and he says, who's going to tell Bar Yochai that the Caesar died? Time to go out. So they leave. It wasn't Elio. It says somebody told them. It couldn't have been Elio because they're going to come back into the cave. They're going to be sent back into the cave. And the Ben Ish Chai says that when Elio gives you a Psura Taiva, like he's going to come and give us a Psura Taiva, then it's indefinite and it stays forever. And because this didn't stay forever, so it wasn't going to be that way. So after all is said and done, they go out and they're very angry because they were just in Gan Eden. They were just in Gan Eden. They saw a completely different world. And they're going out of their minds. And they're saying, what, you're plowing? This temporary world, you know what Olam Haba is all about? And they're burning everything up. And a Baskel comes out and says, you came to destroy my world? Get back to the cave! Turn around and get back to the cave! They turn around and they have no choice. They go back to the cave. And they're there for another 12 months. And afterwards he says, Mishpat Rishon B'Gehenim is only for 12 months, so we could also leave after 12 months. So I once heard a pshat from one of the Sfarim HaKadoshim, I don't remember, but it was a reverse Gehenim. What's Gehenim? Gehenim is usually, it's not an Oynish. God doesn't punish. It's not God's revenge, but it's a purification process where the person has to be able to rid himself from the whatever he took on over here and planned the earth to be able to go into Gan Eden. They were in Gan Eden. They came out of this world and they still thought they were in Gan Eden. What, are you crazy? You out of your mind? Come with me to Gan Eden. Stop working. Stop plowing. So Hashem said, no, you got to get back into this world. So it was a reverse Gehenna. It was going from Gan Eden back to this world. Those are the 12 months. And basically they come out, and there's still a difference of opinion. You know, Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But Rav Shimon Bar Yochai looks at this world very differently. My father used to share with me from Heschel Zed Shaivas, interesting thing. Seeing, right, is much clearer than hearing. Someone, Chasul Haskir, had a choice of losing his eyes or hearing. He'd rather lose his hearing. In this world, that's the way it is. In up there, it begins to change. Hearing is a depth of understanding. People say seeing is believing, but a lot of times seeing is disbelieving. You see one thing, and it's really something else. Bezdin that sees an act of murder cannot rule on it because you're affected emotionally, and therefore you can't think rationally. In the Gemara, it's Tashma. Come in here. Because it's really very deep. The secrets in the Gemara, the Heschel of Zedek Shaiv said, that the secrets of Torah, the Seidus of Torah, like you said before, Moshe, the Kabbalah in the Gemara is much greater than in the Zohar. In the Zohar, it's much more open. So we understand less of it. But in the Gemara, it's much more deeper. It looks like Shar Shnogach HaSapara. It looks like we're learning a whole machlokes about what happens if a guy, you know, spritzes the blood on the Mizbeach in the middle of his hand gets knocked off, whatever. There's much deeper you cite this over here. But it's Tashema. You have to think. Now, not that we have to think about the Kabbalah. We think about the Pshat HaInyan. But in here, in the depth of this Gemara, the Baal HaTanya says, those that work very hard and do their best to understand the Gemara and the Pashat Pshat will understand the secrets of the Gemara in Shemayim. But it's Tashema coming here. It's much more hidden. In the Zohar, it's Tachazi. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai comes out to this world and says, this world is the opposite of Gan Eden. It's very hard. You live this world, you work your way into Gan Eden, you go through whatever punishment, whatever Gehenna, and you finally come down Begilgal again, whatever it takes to get into Gan Eden. But to go from Gan Eden back to this world, that's tough. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, so our purpose is to help people up. We were there, I'm telling you what it is, a story I read once of a plane crash someplace in the mountains between the Andes, in South America. And two real brave guys climbed the mountains. Everyone believed they were going to die. There was no way they were going to survive. And they walked for miles and miles and miles, and they saw, they came back to tell them, if you climb that mountain, it may be weeks and we're dying of hunger, but if you do it, there's civilization on the other side. And then believed them. They said, you're hallucinating. And they convinced them. It's a beautiful story. I don't want to get into it now. But the point is, it was very, they understood. They saw the civilization. They went back into the wilderness to try to save the other ones. So Rav Shimon Yochai looked at his role as, I saw Gan Eden. I see whatever your tzaras are, how terrible it is, how much you think the world is caving in on you, how much you think you're in a cave and there's no hope, you're not going to survive. I'm telling you, 1 ounce of Gan Eden, it's all forgotten. Just don't give up. So basically, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is coming back from Gan Eden to this world to help us up there and say, keep going, keep going. Sometimes the world is confusing. Sometimes we have to, you know, I had to visit. Somebody came to see me today. A very chashuv person in the yeshiva. And I'm cleaning my desk, And my wife knew I had the appointment. She gave me one of my better shirts. I thought no one sees my shirts, but anyway. And a jacket. And I'm there, and I'm taking all my coffee cups in the last 6 weeks. And I'm piling them all up. And I had like 4 or 5 cups, you know. So I have a minute. I do, you know, from the first week after Shoshana, the second Yosek, we have the whole pshat. Anyway, so there was a little bit of tea in the tap one. So very innocently, I made a shakal and I started to drink some of the tea. And I didn't realize there was some coffee left in the fourth one. I try to understand what this looks like. And all of a sudden, whoop! You know, from the inside cups. I wish I could demonstrate it. But anyway, and I look at my shirt and it's, whoa. Not that the shirt had a coffee stain. It's that the coffee stain had a shirt on it. And this guy walks in and I'm like, So I'm showing him these 4 cups and I'm trying to look at the Musa Haskell of it. And I said, there's so much deeper in this world that pours out than what you see on the top. He had no clue what I was talking about. How could he? I had no clue what I was talking about. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, I'm telling you, there's a Gan Eden. I'm telling you, now you feel like in your life the plane crashed. You're alone in a freezing desert over the mountain. Follow me, come. That's the Kayach. He came back into Gan Eden to take everyone out. So I read a beautiful story that there was this, you know, an older couple, they're no kids. They has a little makolet in the someplace in Shari Chesed. And every morning the guy would deliver cases of milk, and you know, the husband would schlep the milk down, and the husband died suddenly, and the almana was left all alone to run the makolet. And she comes one morning, she sees the milk was already by the door. So she assumed the person that delivered the milk understood her predicament, and instead of just dropping it off the truck onto the sidewalk, took it downstairs. And she wanted to thank him. And finally, after a couple of days, she meets the milk guy. And she says, thank you. He says, for what? He says, for carrying down the milk. He says, I didn't carry down the milk. I'm putting it down on the sidewalk the way I always did. Okay, I'll take back the thank you. She wants to know who it is. So she hides in the store. And the next morning at 5 a.m., she sees no other than Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach picking up the cases of milk and dragging it down the stairs. And she runs out in horror and says, Rebbe, what are you doing? He says, what do you mean what I'm doing? You see what? Your husband's not here. I want to do it for him. Come on, I want to have the schus of giving people milk. He kind of convinced her that he wanted this schus. There are certain things that are only attainable down here in this world. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, yes, you can't compare this world to Gan Eden. But this world is a key to Gan Eden. So the mashal that the Mefarshim bring is that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai comes down so deep, deep into the mind. And the deeper you go into a mind, the more they have to pump oxygen in. The deeper you go into the mind, the more powerful the lights have to be. And as the years go on, as we get closer to Mashiach, this inyan that Eliyahu Hanot, that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai reaches out to us, that it says other neshamas go up higher on the day of their yahrzeit. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, in a sense, comes down lower to lift us. The light is greater. So how do we hold on to that? What do we do about it? So the Maranayim says, Lahazrik doyle malaktanim. And very often the gadol makes mistakes or drops down low to be able to lift the cotton. And the Svar Makdashim bring a very interesting thing. You can start a minig on Lag BaOmer. When I say start a minig, I don't mean, come on, minig, I'm starting a new minig. And look, anyone make fun of my minig, I'll... No, that's not what I mean. Who've got who said, Leinahagu covered Zeb Zeb, because there was a minig, right? Leinahagu, Leinahagu, you're not doing my minig? Whack. That was the whole thing. If, for example, you start a minig, we've discussed this before, that before you go to sleep at night, you're going to learn 2 mishnayos, 4 mishnayos, perik mishnayos, whatever it is. Let's say you have a minig, lean nether. Right? You start doing Kriya Shema Lamita. Let's say you have a minute, you'll stop putting Negel Vasa by your bed. Let's say you have a minute. You're not going to scream at anyone in your house at Friday afternoon. Whatever it is, start it like Boimer. By starting it like Boimer and holding on to it, the Koyach of Rav Shimon stays with you. It's like Rav Shimon reaches out and we reach out to his hand. And how do we reach out to his hand? By grabbing it. You know that story, during the war, they were Nebuch running in the Yom Kippur War. They were running from the front, those few soldiers. And they started shooting at them because they thought they were enemy soldiers. And they waved their tzitzes. When they saw that, they said, somehow they knew that it could have been a decoy, but it wasn't a decoy. It can't be the Egyptians are waving tzitzes. So, I read a story in the Zman. They had a whole thing about the first Israeli Air Force was not much of an Air Force. And the pilots they had were a whole assorted group of Jews that came, most of them veterans from World War II, that came from all different countries. And they were flying these half planes, like Buick Chevys. And they were, it was a Czech plane that was made out of old German planes, and whatever, it was a disaster. And one of the planes crashed, and he bailed out, and they thought he was an Arab. They wanted to shoot him, and he didn't speak Yiddish. He didn't speak Hebrew. He didn't even know what tzitzes are. So he's yelling, matzah balls, he's trying to prove he's Jewish. So I said, we're doing our mitzvahs. We're trying to get a hold of Rav Shimon's attention. We're yelling matzah balls. We're so little. We know nothing. But Rav Shimon says, I'll see it. It saved their lives. There's an Indian to start. I've mentioned this before. I know someone that the day after Purim, he puts in a dollar every day into his, every week into an envelope. And on Purim, that's the tzedakah that he gives out. Or he puts in, he has an envelope for his estrig all week. He puts in a dollar. Point is, he wants to live with the Esrig all year. He wants to connect the Sukkos all year. There's an Indian on Lag BaOmer. Take a minig on Lag BaOmer and hold on to it. All the talk about Chai Ratel and all the thing about giving out tzedakah you don't have to give tzedakah just by Rav Shimon. Any tzedakah you give, or any Mesiris Nevesh that you have. Now, you should know that over the years, Lag BaOmer was very, very much a Eretz Yisrael Yom Tov. In Europe, you go back before the war, they knew it was Lag BaOmer. They didn't say Tachnun. It wasn't, closing down streets and big bonfires. It was an Eretz Yisrael thing. And the Welt said it was to make up for Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golus that Eretz Yisrael doesn't have. It was to make up for it. But somehow it became a Chutz L'Aretz Yom Tov also. And I think what happens is it's like Rav Shimon is spreading his wings further. And the whole concept and idea, which of course couldn't have been possible, because it took you 6 months on a boat to get to Eretz Yisrael if you got there, fighting off pirates, or who knows what. But the fact that so many people are traveling to Miran, what's happening is, the world's becoming a smaller place. Rav Shimon, as he's getting closer and closer to the Mashiach, Rav Shimon is saying to Hashem, give me access to more people at a quicker rate. We don't have time. Time is running out. And this nekuda, that even if you're in a cave, you can hold on to it. It's here. So there was a chassid, a vision of chassid, many, many years ago, 1800s, he's in Miran. And he has this tremendous urge to run to his Rebbe. He knows if he goes home, it's over. So he starts running to his Rebbe. Running his Rebbe's in Vizhnitz, in Gross Vadan, in Hungary. He's running to the port in Akko. And as he's running, he tumbles down the mountain, and it was raining, and his Shabbos kaftan, Yerushalayim Dika kaftan, gets full of mud. And he gets onto a ship, and he sends a message to his wife, and he makes it to Hungary. And he comes running into his Rebbe, and they're going, whoa, ham to you, cake mud on him. So he said, and the Rebbe said, he says, I was in Miron, I had such a cheshek to be by the Rebbe, I just came running. So the Tzemach Tzadik, the first vision of the Rebbe, said to me, you brought me anything from Eretz Yisrael? He goes, huh? He's still wearing his Shabbos kaftan. He said, Rebbe, I started running so fast. I tripped as I was rolling down the mountain. I didn't even have time to rub off the coffee stains, the mud. So the Rebbe said to him, you mean the mud on your shoes? The mud on your kaftan now is mud? From Iran, from Astra Kedishim, and I said, yes. He goes, what a beautiful present. And the Rebbe brought it, scraped it, and 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 put it on a dish, and put it down in front. I hope no one's going to get a business now and start selling mud from Iran. But the point is, Rav Shimon Meichai goes into the mud for us. He's there. That was his whole p'china. And what we have to do is scream matzah balls. Wave your tzitzis. Do something. Start some Indian toiv. And hold on to Rav Shimon. Because he's there to help take us out.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.